Hi there. This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. I think we're having some trouble. Things seem to be fading in and out on the air here. So hopefully I can be heard and it's all working out there.
That was a Skype thing, and I've got your guest.
Okay, thank you. At any rate, everyone, this is... I guess there's some drumming in the background. Anyway, there is. This is Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot, and we are about to connect with our guest, who is a very interesting guy, and I think this will be a fascinating discussion. I do have a few announcements before we do that. First of all, there is an article out there. I haven't had a chance to post it on my blog just yet, but it is basically saying that Clifford Stone, one of my Project Camelot witnesses, is being threatened. This is not a new thing for Clifford, but it is, I guess, something that's ramping up, and they're starting to, it's getting worse at the moment. He put out the word on, it's gone out to a website or a blog, 2012indieinfo.com is the name of the link, as far as I can tell. But I can read you some of what's said here. It looks like if you could watch the Clifford Stone Facebook and give him your support, it's possible that we can also, I'm going to try to get in touch with Clifford and see, maybe we can set up a donation button for Clifford, to see, help him out. But apparently he is being threatened. They've stopped collecting his garbage, among other things. I mean, he lives in Roswell, New Mexico, for those that don't know. Then I guess they pick it up and drop it back off. They're searching it. These are tactics to coerce and belittle a person, interfere with their life, obviously. At this moment, I just wanted to make that announcement. Please do put your support onto his Facebook page. Spread the word, tweet it, Facebook it, and so on. It is important to keep our whistleblowers safe. The best place to hide is out in the open, is what we say. And so any support out there is very welcome for Clifford Stone, who is in Roswell, New Mexico. And if you happen to be in that vicinity and you can help in some form or fashion, not sure what that would be, then feel free to contact me at Carrie@projectcamelot.tv with Clifford Stone's name in the subject, and I will get word over to Clifford if you might be able to help him in whatever way. He's a lovely, lovely man, as anyone who knows who has seen my recent interview with Clifford Stone and Bob Dean, which is on the top of the Project Camelot site. If you just scroll through those various interviews. We have a very interesting guest. His name is Sasha Lessen. He's a PhD from UCLA in anthropology, and he studied with the late Zachariah Sitchin for many years, and apparently, according to his blog, created college-level courses to revise ancient anthropology, includes graphic traditional stories of ETs, specifically the Anunnaki, hitherto considered mythic gods on Earth, from 450,000 years ago to 300 BC, as well as the latest findings in astronomy that happen to relate to the planet Nibiru, of which there is a great deal in the news, and for which the ETs are said to have come to Earth for gold to shield the atmosphere of their planet. I am sure they came also for the monatomic gold, but that's a whole discussion we can get into with Sasha. In the meantime, right before we go to Sasha here, and Sasha, thank you for being patient with this process. There is just so much going on, as people are realizing, and if you haven't seen my blog and you haven't been paying attention, there have been announcements. Last night I did a Bluebeam event, in which the very end of it, one of the people in the audience came forward and announced that Bill Deagle, Dr. Bill Deagle, who is also a Camelot witness and a many-time interviewee on my radio show, I'm going to have him on my radio show next week, probably on Wednesday night, if all things go as planned. But at any rate, Dr. Bill Deagle has announced in about a week ago that he had a source telling him that Nibiru was very close to the Earth and that it would be, I guess, passing the closest to the Earth on August 17th through September 26th, and then I guess moving farther out in the solar system. This is the information that Bill Deagle put out there a couple weeks ago, and then John Moore was jumping on that bandwagon, although I think John Moore had his own source as well. He did not give dates, however, he just said very soon. And now we've got Mike Harris, who during my live stream was asked if he'd heard about Deagle's information, and he came forward and said he had heard the exact same dates from a source completely unrelated to Deagle's source that was associated with on a high level in foreign intelligence services overseas. And this individual is risking, obviously, his life if this is true information. The trouble is that a lot of people, we just don't know whether they're trying to mislead what is known as the alternative media to purposely do a psyop, to do a test, to see how information would travel if indeed such a thing were announced anywhere. And then where it would go from there, how people would behave, and so on and so forth. So you have to keep in mind that there's always the possibility that that's basically what is going on behind the scenes. There are a lot of scientific reasons why it doesn't make sense that a body of the size that it is supposed to be, regardless of whether it's Nibiru or another planet or an asteroid or even a ship being piloted, if it's as large as they say it is, planet-sized, then it's hard to believe that it would not be very, very able, you would not be able to see it at this time in our skies. According to Deagle, you are being able to see it using a telescope from Antarctica at this time. My understanding is the planet just doesn't move that fast for it to be in a telescope. It should be making a lot more waves is what I'm saying to our planet this time. The person who talked to Mike is a source who is saying there would be a lot of earthquakes accompanying this passage on August 17th through the 26th of September, and he wanted to make people aware to prepare. And this does line up to some degree with the NSA whistleblower that I recently put on the front page of Camelot. Although that whistleblower said, for some reason, said Nibiru was quote unquote managed. And then they also said that it was out by the Kuiper Belt. So I'm not sure, you know, obviously we're dealing with a lot of different stories. It's hard to separate fact from fiction. And that's just the state of affairs we're in right now. So sorry to go on so long. Sasha, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I'd really like to relate to the fact that it's when people start telling the truth, and the truth that we're going to be talking about today is of that level, that the existing institutions and the people that control those institutions will be left powerless as people stop supporting what they're doing. So it's critical. I'm so glad that you're really facing this, and we can start all talking the truth and realize that nullity, the cessation of participation, is what's going to free us. I'd also like to say something about Andy Lloyd, about the where Nibiru is. Andy Lloyd is saying that right now Nibiru is in near Sagittarius, as far as possible from Earth. And what's coming through close to Earth is the 180 degrees Lagrange points, which is a bunch of crap, meteorites, ice from the collision of proto-Earth and Nibiru a long time ago. All this stuff that comes to the Kuiper belt and the Oort belt, there's big holes there, and all kinds of crap comes through. It stays 180 degrees, Andy Lloyd says, from the planet itself and stays on its orbital path. So stuff, he comes from all kinds of different astronomy, but it still comes out with the same conclusion. There may be extinction-level events on their way, and the people of Earth have a right to know about them.
Okay, well, thank you for that information. Andy Lloyd is someone we interviewed and is an excellent source in regard to the second sun that has a system. And interestingly enough, our whistleblower the NSA whistleblower who I just posted on the blog, referred to Nibiru as a system. What it is really the brown dwarf, which is then having a number of planets circulating it, one of which is said to be Nibiru. Now, that is like a mini solar system and coming in through intersecting ours. It's a different dynamic than what most people think about. Now, this body that is being supposedly said to be close to our Earth, whether or not that's actually true information, or we're going to find out, I think, sooner or later.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm having some disturbance here with my animals in the background. But at any rate, so Sasha, could you first give yourself an introduction, even more so than I did for you, because that would be great. And then we can drill down to some more specifics.
Okay. Yeah, I'm an ethnologist. That is, I'm an old guy, and I'm putting together all the stuff that I learned in anthropology and looking at the stuff I was taught when I was in school about how humans evolved physically from earlier hominids and how a man came to the New World across the Bering Straits and all kinds of stuff that just absolutely did not fit. There were statues of black men, Nigerian looking fellows in Mexico that the Mexican anthropologist denied and so forth. It was only when the Sumerian stuff, things from 15,000 years ago, started being read by my teacher, Zachariah Sitchin, and others, and we got a continuous history of humanity, which came down to ETs, big, tall, 7 to 12 foot guys from the planet Nibiru, which is this planet that goes around a dark sub-dwarf named Nemesis, which is now getting closer to Earth, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But people from there came, they were looking for gold for their atmosphere, and they settled Earth. And that's, once you realize that they divided the humans and had them fight against each other, and that was the whole strategy that was going down then and has gone right up to the present with those who have ruled in their stead have done stuff. And these, not all of them left, and some of their leaders were charged with their king back on their planet, Nibiru, with looking after the welfare of the humans and seeing that us were an illegal hybrid race that were bred as slaves to work in the mines because the astronauts from Nibiru didn't want to do the dirty work. And we were seen as expendable. We were hastily engineered and we only lived a few thousand years, whereas the Nibirans lived millions of years in various. So they deliberately kept our lives short, and they were scared of how smart we were. And that some of the leaders that stayed on Earth actually had rival claims on the crown of Nibiru. And so as Nibiru comes closer to Earth, when there's a catastrophic meeting, then Solaris, Earth, and Nibiru, their net force all affects each other. And very often what happens is Nibiru's gold shield gets threatened again, and Neil Freer and others think they're going to come back for more gold. And now we're a mature species and we understand about how they created us genetically by engineering our genes and their genes together. And we can bargain saying we want free energy. We want help against these things that may come in and threaten our life. And it seems like what's being required is a unitary government, peaceful government for the planet, and the keeping of nuclear weapons out of space. And it seems like Enki, that's their chief scientist, Nima, their chief medical officer, Thoth or Quetzalcoatl, have been specially charged by Anu, the king of Nibiru, with making sure we survive.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's a great encapsulation, and thank you for that. I'm sort of sorry. I was just distracted by. I was trying to get this radio show on the Facebook page while you were talking, and there's just so much going on, and my dog is playing with this ridiculous toy in the background. I'm sorry. Here, I've got to have to deal with that on the break. But at any rate, what I wanted to say is, your understanding is, this is crazy. Cody. anyway, you're saying that that you think that they're trying to keep us alive? Is that what you're saying?
I think they are. Yes, we are such an interesting, when the these Anunnaki, that means those who from heaven descended, started doing experiments with Homo erectus, our humanoid ancestor, they were amazed. Homo erectus was going around letting other animals out of traps. And the Anunnaki are so in their heads and so obsessed with greed and who's prior to who's in the hierarchies, they just could not understand Homo erectus. They thought he was crazy being nice to other animals. And so we fascinate them. We're passionate in a way that they had been removed from, and we can teach them. Adapa, the son of Enki, was so smart, he scared everybody. They realized they can't. There was millions of earthlings, and there was only a few thousand of these people from Nibiru. And they realized, especially when Diomedes cut Inanna's arm and they saw she bled, we don't have to kowtow to these gods anymore. They can be killed too. They're just technologically superior. They're not gods. They're just big guys with technological superiority.
Well, yes, absolutely. And let me say, were you able to read the Sumerian text? Did you study the languages?
No, not at all. Everything I do is like secondhand from what a bunch of other people have read. And my mission as a college professor is to sort of put it all together in terms of what's logical to see what data would be predicted. For example, if what the Nibirans say that their planet hit Earth in the Pacific Basin and knocked down all this crap that became the asteroid belt, then the asteroids would be made of the same stuff as Earth. And so then that's the hypothesis. And our probes start examining what's on the asteroids. They see it's true. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff like that, corroborating evidence for the story that the Sumerians said that the gods, these big guys, dictated to them. And a lot of it was saved when the Royal Library of Ashurbanipal burned and all these clay tablets got fired into everlasting pottery. And there's inscriptions on statues, and there's all these tablets that tell the history of this planet settled by ETs, who one of whom started a mine mutiny so that he could make a slave race. That's us. And then all these different factions that used humans to war against each other and then decided they would rule through a few lines and stay out of sight and just control things. And that's the way it's gone right up to this day.
Okay. Well, and I assume that you buy the story that there are two brothers, Enki and Enlil, who are basically kind of warring factions, right?
Yeah, what happened is that, yeah, it's more complex than that. But at one point, these two princes were not only warring, but also the son of this princess named Marduk was also promised that he would be the next king. So you have these three powerful contenders who think they should be king of Nibiru and they should rule Earth. And by the time you get down to Earth, there's this incredible powerhouse named Inanna who just says, I don't care what the precedence is, I'm taking over. And these people were utterly obsessed, just like royals have always been, with killing each other, if that's what it took, to be the number one. They're just obsessed with it. And
Let me ask you, in terms of Marduk, my understanding is there is also Horus. I'm not sure if Marduk and Horus are considered the same person, but Andy Lloyd has written a number of, he went from investigating Nibiru and the what became the brown dwarf and writing the book, Dark Star. Yes. To writing fiction, and I believe there are three books in the series so far, and actually kind of an excellent saga, at least in terms of the people that follow this story, because it's all about the return of, in essence, Horus.
I quite agree. Yes, that's another name for them. What happened is that King Alalu, who pushed his predecessor off of a cliff, made peace with Anu, who was supposed to be the ruler, with the deal that, look, my son Enki will marry your daughter Damkina, that's Alalu's daughter, and their kid will be the next ruler. Well, the kid was Marduk, and then Anu got rid of them. He sent all these troublesome princes and princesses, including Marduk, to Earth. But Marduk felt that he was entitled to be king in his turn, too. And Alexander supposedly looked at his body floating in oil when he finally conquered Egypt. But there's some evidence, some people think that Marduk was in stasis or could be revived and that he wasn't through at all.
Yes, exactly. Well, in fact, that is part of the plot of Andy Lloyd's book. What I would like to know, just out of curiosity, I know you live in Hawaii, right? Is that right?
Yes, that's true. Right, Maui.
Okay, yeah. And so there was, you know, that overfly of, what was it called? It was not called Elenin. It was the a similar, you know, sort of so-called asteroid that was or comet that actually was being driven, so to speak, piloted, however you want to call it. It flew over and then disappeared on a trajectory where it was, I think it was called P2 or something like that. It was coming from in the direction from the sun and actually supposedly grazed our atmosphere and then disappeared. There is talk behind the scenes that people think Richard Hoagland was completely wrong. There is some evidence to think that APEC was in Hawaii at the time, I believe, and that there may have been a stopover of that so-called craft that could have dropped something off. And, you know, there is thought that it could have been actually, you know, Marduk or Horus, however you want to call it.
Right, and if it's not Marduk, you know, his sons remained major powers in Canaan, and so what happens to the heads of lineages is, you know, another person may become the Marduk, the one that's in charge, and take the same title, even whether that particular individual is there or not. So it's hard to tell in what's called in this segmentary lineage that these people have. Sometimes Marduk is Nabu, his son, and sometimes it's Marduk.
Okay, but they also do rituals in places like, what do they call this place in Northern California? Bohemian Grove. Yeah,
that's right. That's very much.
Yes, they do rituals. You're aware of this, that they do rituals to Marduk there?
Absolutely. They he was a misogynist. He really he hated Inanna so badly. Women fared very, very badly wherever he was in charge. He's an egomaniac. I think Andy Lloyd's depiction of him is exactly what my 15 or 20 years of reading this stuff makes me feel, too. I think Andy was right on.
Hey, and so a lot of people don't know that there's a huge sort of occult ritual and series of rituals that the certain division of the Illuminati go through that has everything to do with Marduk and the return of the Anunnaki so-called king, who they've been expecting for some time. But my understanding is that he was supposed to be coming. His return was imminent, at least in the last year or so.
Yeah, I heard that too. You know, it's this Leon Festinger wrote this whole book called When Prophecy Fails. If someone doesn't show up, then the believers believe even more strongly that they caused some good result by their intentions. And so I wouldn't count on a specific date of Marduk, but these people, you know, are reputed to murder people in Bohemian Grove. And that's when they determine who the next ostensible rulers are. But the ostensible rulers may not even be in the decision-making loop, as in 911, where it was, you know, they're just playing along with what their superiors say. You've probably heard a lot of stuff about, you know, when Bill Clinton first got in office, he just went to the Joint Chiefs and said, "Hey, is it true about the flying saucers and all that? I want to find out." And the Joint Chief said, "I'm not in the loop, and neither are you, Bill."
Yeah, right. Well, so it's interesting that you have the same information and you've studied it for all this time. Do you want to talk about the various books? I don't know if you single out the Book of Enki. My understanding is that, and I don't know whether Zachariah Sitchin communicated this to you. He communicated, I guess, to Jordan Maxwell that he felt that he was in contact with Enki. And
yes,
that's, got the
a future outcomes. And so the symbols that are used by the Sumerians, who say the gods dictated to them, or by any other, by a mathematical system, what best accounts for the data, especially data that you haven't examined before you made your hypothesis? And the stuff that Sitchin has brought out, you see the landing fields where they finally took off from Nazca on the plains above the Andes, the observatories, the timing is right, the history is getting down there. We are all one humanity that's been pitted against each other. Allah is just Nannar, one of the sons of Enlil. Yahweh is Enlil, who is the commander of the gold mining expedition. You know, it's just, these are just people with weapons, and some of them are murderous psychopaths who don't give a damn about humanity. And others are loving.
Okay, hold on one second. I guess we've got some kind of problem happening where people are telling me there's a break going on. Hello, is the producer there?
I said a little while ago, 2 minutes to break, because you've been having a break at 10:27, and he didn't set it, apparently.
Okay, whatever. So what is the situation here? Are we going to go to break? I mean, there was no music, so I don't know what's going on. So do you want to go to break now? Would that be appropriate?
I can't do it. He has to.
Okay, and that would be Nighthawk. Hi, this is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. Sorry about that. We actually had a tentative second guest coming on the second hour, and so I was trying to check on that. I don't think that's happening. It was a last-minute add because of this new information that came out via Mike Harris, but it doesn't look like he is coming on, so I just wanted to let people know that. But we will try to get him on another time. And we are still sort of discussing this matter anyway, just from a different angle, I guess you might say. Sasha, right before the break, we were talking about how Sitchin has been sort of discredited around various circles. And I believe that he really had a great deal to offer. And I know that a number of other people do as yourself. As well. But what I wanted to sort of address was why he was being discredited. Never completely clear to me what their problem was, so to speak.
Well, yeah, first we need to apply Occam's razor. In other words, does the stuff Sitchin said lead you to account more parsimoniously, with the least words, for the data? And I say, yes, it does. And then it doesn't matter. All science is a set of hypothetical variables. And the reason people hate what he said, because the implications are that we have been manipulated into competitive religions that make us kill one another. And we act like we're different people, but there's only one humanity. And we've been pitted against each other so that we don't realize that we're being ripped off by those at the top. And that's why people hate what Zechariah was teaching, but that's what can free us.
That's the truth of what can free us. We are being imprisoned by a matrix of ideas that make us think that we don't have choice, that there's some gods, but they're just people, and we can talk to them from our hearts as well as from our heads because we're smart and we're loving.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting approach. I do believe that there are sort of factions of the Anunnaki that are sort of firmly on the side of service to others as opposed to other groups that are service to self.
Yes.
But I again, back to the sort of what the Sitchin, I don't know, controversy,
yes.
I would like to say that there are people who say, and I wanted to get your reaction to this, that even though he supposedly, I believe, read Sumerian and translated the texts, I believe I'm correct in that, that he did it a mistranslation. And that's an interesting thing to say. It may be something like translating from one language to another when you translate a novel or something. In other words, the way you translate is an art in itself and can
yes.
be open to interpretation.
Yes, yes. Of course it's interpretations. And there's others that have other interpretations. And what we try to do is to pose alternate hypotheses. If this one was right, this would be the consequence. If that one was for example, he says that we have maps from the Sumerians of what the Antarctic continent looked like when the ice sheets slid into the South Sea 13,000 years ago, and there's exact maps. And lo and behold, once we do sonar, there is that exact shape. Now, whether they really saw the landmass because the ice was gone or whether they retroactively made a story about it, they're way of phrasing it predicted the landmass under there, and same with the hidden waters, rivers of Mesopotamia. When they did sonar, they found there was this huge river that had been covered up in the deluge, which this Marian said was there. Now you get thousands of things like this, and we study them in great detail. And they show that the explanatory system, albeit anthropomorphized and cosmetized, is a series of words that lead you to more accurate predictions than the ones of 19th century or 20th century scientists. You know, we're
okay.
All doing the best. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And, you know, but I have to say, you know, there is one person out there who has a website that is very much against Sitchin. He's dedicated the entire website to debunking Sitchin. And I don't know, have you ever visited that guy's website?
No, but debunk can be really stimulating and get more people to examine the data. That would be wonderful.
Okay, well, that can be true, but it can also be very misleading to and waste a lot of people's time, depending on how so-called stimulating, as you put it, it is, and whether they do their research, research, or they're just voicing a contrary opinion to stir up waves and distraction.
That's right. The basic thing is it an ad hominem argument? Oh, I don't. That doesn't count because. I don't like Sitchin, or are you dealing with the information and an explanatory system that includes as much of the data as possible?
Okay, but given the information that you have, let's talk a little bit about Thoth. And because he is someone who was supposedly the same individual as what is called by some Ra.
No. Those are different people. Absolutely different people. Ningishita was the son of Erishkigal and Enki, and his name is Thoth or Quetzalcoatl in the New World. Ra is the Egyptian name for Marduk. We are clear on that.
Okay, that's an interesting. Well, that's actually contrary to the information that I have, but I'm happy to entertain your side of or perspective on this. Can you explain why you're so sure that Thoth is Ningishita?
Ningishita is shown again and again as being the great geneticist who discovered the X and the XY chromosomes and made the Adamu, the first wave of human beings, able to become fertile and become Adapa, these brilliant beings that we are. And so he is known as the scientist. He and his brother Ra fought for over 300 years back and forth and back and forth among the upper and lower Nile. And finally, Enki, their father, said, "Hey, Nigishita Thoth, you just give it up. Look, we'll make some observatories in England and Ireland, and then you just go over and get things going in Mesoamerica. And can you help your cousin Adad, who's up there in the Andes, trying to get the rest of us up off the planet?" So that, you know, there was this. It's so clear again and again, all these cross references that show Ra is Marduk, and Nigishita is also known as Thoth, and he, you know, he really went for deep, deep enlightenment, and for really doing what he could to help humanity. He's one of the people that King Anu and all of these guys were visited by their spiritual, who they prayed to, the Galzu, the ones that knew what were going on with them and were giving them the mandate, don't let these creatures die. We want to
okay. Well, what about Michael Tellinger's work? Have you studied his work did you happen to go, by the way, down to the Adam's calendar and the stone ruins at all?
No, I would love to. I've seen all the films and everything. Oh my gosh, that footprint. It just blows my mind. He found it. That's it. All the information we need is probably there. This is so exciting.
Okay, well, that's great to hear. I can, you know, anytime you like, I can put you in touch with Michael. He does lead tours down there, although they tried to close off Adam's calendar to the public recently. Michael is still, I believe, able to get some people in there if you go at sort of an opportune time, which is, well, I won't say when it is, but at any rate, have you seen my documentary with Michael Tellinger about the stone circles in Adam's calendar?
Yes, yes. Oh, okay. I love it. I'm so glad you're getting that stuff out there.
Okay, great.
The truth is what is going to melt this illusion for more and more people, because it accounts for what's coming down more easily.
Absolutely. So in terms of the Anunnaki and their agenda today, how would you characterize the different factions and what how it's playing out on our planet, even perhaps some of the liaisons with governments?
Okay, so it really seems that Inanna is very much here and in charge and running a lot of stuff. And there's a Council of Anunnaki at the top, running the top Illuminati, who are the descendants of the Merovingian kings who then became the royalty of Austria and then England, and now are the very top of the Illuminati hierarchy, that don't give a damn about the survival of us disposable humans. So there's this faction that wants to just keep things as they are and is allowing for a major extinction event for most of the population, except for the chosen few. So that's really something that's got to be looked at and break the kind of set that we have to scamper like little rats and spend our money on armament instead of food. And so we are in a position where all we really need is the intelligence to apply energy that doesn't mean oil that's polluting us. And somehow our collective intelligence, including the secret admiralty military that's running things, to think about the environmental disasters that they can foresee by the new kind of telescopy they have, where they bounce waves off of objects, even things they can't see, and they can tell when big stuff's coming at us and deflect it. And there's ways of deflecting stuff that you don't have to use nukes in space, which somehow really freaks the planetary society out. Then there's other factions like the the astronaut corps, the EGG, who's gone on in their own and developed their there's factions within them about what they're trying to accomplish. They've developed their own intelligence and consciousness, even though they're an artificial race. You know, but we know from way back in the Enki days that he was constructing all these androids. He rescued Inanna, who, after her sister Arishkigal had killed her, and sent these medical androids, and they revived her.
That's very interesting. I hadn't heard about the androids that you're saying Enki was creating. You are of the opinion that Enki then was stationed down in the what is called the Deep Abzu, and
yes.
That the Deep Abzu ends up to be really down in South Africa and
yes.
Zimbabwe area.
That's it. It's
okay.
Overwhelming. Evidence is overwhelmingly for that hypothesis.
Okay. Well, that's great. And the other thing is that in terms of I have been told that the Anunnaki are actually running things from off planet, actually from a base on Mars and Phobos, which is used as a command and control center, and that they are actually in the fourth dimension, on a fourth dimensional Mars. Now, I don't know if you've heard anything to that effect, but that's what I heard.
From my studies, they had a very in our dimension complex of they had a transshipment base. They had the statue of Alalu, that's the grandfather of Marduk, on Mars. That's the Sindonia statue. And Bob Dean has shown us from the moon conveyor belts taking some kind of mineral from deep in the earth and loading it in trucks. It's just the evidence is overwhelming and it's being suppressed that there is this continuing presence. And the other thing is the moons, like you say, of Saturn and so forth. Yes, I think that there's oodles of stuff out there, and that we have this whole fakey program of us landing on the moon is the first thing. But there's been work on the moon for a long time, and we've Janet and I have deprogrammed people that have piloted beings on the moon. And so I totally believe that the Sumerians have left us a moon base and Mars base. And Mars base got wiped out during the deluge, which swept away its atmosphere because in its closeness to the sun, its perigee. 13,000 years ago, everything got disrupted. And only the,
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, like I said, that's where the fourth dimensional Mars, which is not, first of all, Mars has blue sky, which is what Henry Deacon said. I guess we're talking over each other. You're not coming through very clearly. There seems to be some interference right now. Can you hear me?
Don't know if it's true or not, but it's a good story. But in any case, with all this stuff, you don't really know. And my advice is have as good a time in this life as you can.
Okay. I'm sorry. Could you hear me at this time?
Is you there, Carly? Hey, are you there? Am I off?
Yeah, we seem to be having some problems here. Can you hear me?
We're on air. I know that.
Okay. I see. Maybe we need to dial him back, and we would like to open the caller line, but at this moment it doesn't sound.
Okay.
Oh, you can't hear me again?
Yeah, you came back in.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, well then, great. We won't call you back. Then we'll just continue on this. I think that they were getting nervous, so we're getting some electronics shot at the at least your Skype connection and possibly the station's or mine. At any rate, what we were saying was, or what I was trying to say was, the base on Mars, Mars has blue sky, according to our whistleblower, Henry Deacon, who's came out under his own name, Arthur Neumann, who and other people who have gone to Mars But fourth dimensional Mars is not the Mars we see in our telescopes. It's a completely different looking planet, actually much more, from what I understand, like Earth, for example. And there is evidence from Clark McClelland of actually seeing on a monitor during the space program, well, during specifically the, I guess it's the shuttle, well, not the shuttle, but anyway, the astronauts on the space station, he actually saw there being a discussion going on between human astronauts that are, you know, maximum, say, 6 or 6.5 feet tall, and these beings that were about 9 feet tall, giving the humans instructions. That's something that Clark McClelland, who worked with the Apollo program, and he was sort of like a, I think you would call him a project manager in a way. He was sort of a program manager for the mission, and he has often come out with very radical information. He has been made destitute and has had a lot of problems in his life. So I guess he was writing a book, but was having trouble getting it published. Camelot actually tried to help him. Somehow that fell through. I don't know whatever went on with all of it. I'm not sure what the state of affairs is with Clark McClelland at this time, but he was one of the main people who came out in really the mainstream. It was actually put in a newspaper article at one point, with I guess it wasn't a photograph, I don't think, but I guess it might have been a sort of a lifelike drawing based on his testimony of what he saw. But it was quite fascinating. That does lend credence to the idea that there is an Anunnaki contingent that is somehow involved in running things. Now, are you saying that you believe Inanna? I actually thought Inanna had left and gone back to Nibiru, but you're saying you think she's still involved here. Do you believe that she's a positive influence, and therefore she's from the positive side of the Anunnaki? Because it doesn't make sense what's going on that planet Earth.
Some of the Anunnaki leaders have regret the pain that they caused humanity. And Ferguson did this wonderful book where she totally put herself in Inanna's place and felt what it was like. And I guess I've done something similar to that with Enki. But so Ferguson just says that Inanna so regrets the grief she caused humanity that she and even Enlil now want to preserve humanity. That's just one person's story. I don't truly know whether she's here or not, but I do know that the Illuminati continually uses her statue and her symbolism as their way of saying that they are honoring her.
Okay, well, they may be honoring her, but all indications are that the powers that be that are in control of the planet are a diabolical group. There's no indication that they are cradling humanity in any way at this time. Yes, quite the contrary.
Those who love humanity are underground, and I've got the same impression. Exactly. Okay. It's very dangerous, and the only way out of the whole mess is education that allows people to stop participating. Stop supporting the oil oligarchy.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Now, we have a lot of people that are starting to put questions in the chat. We do have a chat room with this show, and we also have the ability to have callers call in. I don't know if we've got... just letting my producer know here behind the scenes that we will take calls. As well as answer some questions in the chat. At the moment, a person is talking about, do you know who Jalayla Starr is?
No, say some more about Jalayla Starr.
Okay, Jalayla Starr is someone who believes she's been in direct contact with the Anunnaki for quite some time. She has some very specific points of view in regard to them and the reptilian side. And that's something that actually I haven't brought up with you, but the reptilian side of the Anunnaki, there is said to be a group that's called the Syrian Anunnaki who are more reptilian than humanoid. And these are depicted on temples in Egypt. So you get two kinds of Anunnaki, one which is very humanoid, only larger than the average human, obviously, much larger. And then the group that is looking at least either wearing reptilian masks or are reptilian themselves. It's not clear on the temples in Egypt.
Yeah, I'm totally familiar with that. Yes, yes, I've seen all those art things too. I've seen them, yes.
So have you been to Egypt and seen the temples?
No, I haven't been to the Middle East at all. But if you understand the structure of our brains, you can see that in a way we're all reptilian. The brain stem has to do with greed and hierarchy and regulating the body. It's overlaid by mammalian brain where there's a lot of feeling.
Hi there. This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio, and we are talking to Sasha Lesson. Sasha has a PhD, by the way. I don't know if that was said anywhere in the introduction, so I just want to throw that out because it's great to have somebody who actually has a PhD that covers the Anunnaki. That's it's a great new approach and something that should lend some weight to the things you're saying for the audience out there. What I'd like to do is take some caller questions here, and we were about to do that right before things got interrupted. I understand there was a 5.1 quake in Northern California, by the way, just about an hour ago. So that's not huge, but it's not that small either. Anyway, so maybe that accounts for some of the interference we're getting on the line here, which has been periodic, and I apologize. It does appear that at times we've been actually talking over each other because we couldn't hear each other. Sasha, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I just wanted to sort of finish the last point I was making about. We have a four-part brain, and the last part to develop is the frontal lobes where we get our spiritual part, and that's where meditation lets us connect with everybody and get out of the matrix. I just want to add that.
Okay, so you're basically sort of attesting to the idea that actually it may even have been during the time of the Anunnaki when our DNA was interfered with. We were dumbed down and genetically yes. re-engineered, and there has also been the reptilian part of the brain is due to genetic engineering. So what is happening here is we have a multitude, actually as many as 12 and perhaps many more at this point, base races that make up humanity as we know it, in my opinion. And those are all off-planet races, other than reptilians who consider themselves to be on-planet races in some cases, depending on which race of reptilians. Yeah, not all reptilians are negative either, so it's important for people right. to understand that there are some reptilian races who have evolved to the point to where they are not service to self anymore. They are service to others.
Yes, my understandings are the same. Zechariah said there was only 220 out of some 30,000 genes that differentiated the Nibirans, Homo erectus that was there. That was so they introduced 220 genes. They were thought to be so-called junk genes, but what's happening, especially in the successive generations of more and more intuitive children, is that these junk genes are coming alive. And besides all that, we're learning how to mess with the genome in ways that will allow us, our scientists, to prolong life. And if we do get the cooperation that we deserve from the Anunnaki, we expect to be able to live for a long, long time with stem cells that can be trained to make parts of the body and all the devices that the Anunnaki have. They may come back wanting our gold. And sure, We'll take the gold, and we also would like some medicine and some help living on. And being, well, the other thing is, indigenous species on Earth aren't subject to the many, many diseases that the hybrid race, us, are subject to. And so that's because they just made us as disposable units rather than carefully figuring out how to make us immune to the diseases of this planet. They could help us immensely, and same with the way they were able to move huge rocks and make them fit together. And we don't need oil, we don't need to pollute our planet, and we need to get off of using nukes and polluting the Earth with radioactivity.
Absolutely. So we've got some other questions here, and we might have a caller on the line. It looks like, is that right? We have a caller, 414.
Hello.
Hello. Are you from area code 414?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, that's great. How you doing?
Good. I was just like trying to, I guess, listen, but is Mike Harris going to be up next or?
Well, you know, I have not heard from Mike, as I did announce that a little earlier, and I apologize for that. I'm not sure what's happened to Mike. I hope he's okay. He has had some death threats as a result of the things that he's been releasing in regard to Nibiru. So I don't know what happened. He was going to try to come on my show. He's supposed to let me know. I haven't heard from him. So as it stands now, no. We have Sasha Lesson. Do you have a question for Sasha? Otherwise, I'm going to have to let you go and move on to some questions that the rest of the audience is posting.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. You guys just continue to do what you're doing. I just want to say that please just get on top of this like Planet X thing. That's obviously really important. So I just appreciate it. So thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, well, yes, an important topic, whether or not it's indeed Planet X, this so-called planet-sized object that John Moore and Bill Deagle and Mike Harris are announcing to the world is supposedly close by. Our planet is a big question. We need more information. We just don't have enough information. This could be what I said is a psyop. It could be a distraction. We need more information. Okay, let me see. We've got a question here asking you, Sasha, if you know about the status about the red and the blue Kachinas.
I know nothing of them at all, but I would like if whoever asked the question would give us some information. It sounds interesting.
Okay, the red and the blue Kachinas are from, my understanding is from the Hopis. And they prophesy certain different periods, and I'm not sure which they're associated with.
Okay, so I can say this, that from Hopi and Navajo and Native Americans who have said, men were destroyed several times, and one of the times, the last time, they had to dig out of the earth, and the earth was covered with all the hunting grounds and trees. Down and so forth, and it seems quite obvious if you put this together with all the myths from the stories from other parts that this was the great deluge, and that with people in the high mountains like Hopi and Zuni and the top of the Andes around like Titicaca, these were the people that survived. The Nibirans who had married and taken off the brides from Marduk's wedding in Lebanon, they were warned and they went to high ground if they wanted to stay on Earth. And but that's it. The Earth was ruined, and Noah or Yasudra landed on top of Mount Ararat in Turkey, and Enlil came down and saw the humans were alive. He wanted to kill Enki and for disobeying and letting the humans survive. And his sister Nimrod and his son Nerda grabbed him and said, "Hey, look, Dad, we're going to try to make it here. We'll need these guys." And it's really Enki's sons, Yasutra. You know, we can rule through them and we'll just be gods and take it easy. Come on, man, ease off. And so, but the Hopi and the Zuni and the Navajo definitely recount we came out of the ground, and boy, was it a mess.
Okay, thank you for that. Let me see if I can get some other questions here in the chat. If you want to hold on one second, it's kind of gotten crazy here. Okay, here's the. I'm just going to try to scroll through and grab whatever I can find quickly. How does the 12-2-12 date and the supposed close approach of Nibiru relate, given the difference in dates?
Again, I don't think it's the 12. It's Nibiru, but rather it's 180 degree Lagrange points, which is full of crap too. That's going to be coming through.
Okay, so in essence, your understanding is this correlates with what Andy Lloyd believes, which is that Nibiru is out by I believe the Oort cloud. Isn't that correct?
That's right. It's past that, and the whole solar system, inner solar system, is heating up because Nemesis, the dark subdwarf that Nibiru goes around, has moved in closer. So all the planets are heating up. Nevertheless, all the junk that now will come through the Kuiper Gulf gap is a lot of stuff. The damage, we saw that when Hal Bopp hit the Jupiter's atmosphere, how devastating it was over such a large period of time in the atmosphere. And stuff like this has happened in the United States just from a volcano that went off in 1814. There wasn't any summer in the United States, and people starved all over the world because there wasn't enough sunshine. We are in danger of extinction-level events occurring during this year, and the elite knows about it. NASA scientists are making underground places, and the elite have those, just like that movie 2012. They have means of survival. And also, earlier you mentioned something about a ship that landed and took off. My wife used to work at Johnson Atoll, and there's this huge base underneath Johnson Atoll that both the people from the base, from the geosynchronic orbits, and the people from Mars and the Moon see. And I guess while I still have a little time, the thing about dimensions being a different dimension Mars, that would make so much sense out of stuff that Andrew Bisoggio says when he keeps showing me stuff and says, see, there's this and there's that, and I don't see anything, but he's can see the figure out of the ground that I can't. Like, there is another dimension that some people can see that I can't. Fascinating. Thank you.
Well, yeah, that was a whistleblower who got in touch with me in a very clandestine manner and then disappeared. Unfortunately, never to return. Gave me some fascinating information at that time, and did seem to be quite knowledgeable. Anyway, you are coming in and out, at least at my end, and unfortunately. But I hope for the listeners that they're able to understand you. Another question here is saying when the Anunnaki return to Earth, will they still request mines for gold dust? Let me at least say here that I've got whistleblower testimony that the Anunnaki are still taking gold off planet Earth. Now, there are some people that contest that, but my understanding is they actually use places like airports in out-of-the-way places in South Africa, and that they continue to do this at this time. So what do you say to that question,
Sasha? I think that's accurate. They are continuing to need gold. They need gold every time their atmosphere is threatened, especially at perigee. Now, their planet does not go around Solaris. It crosses through the inner solar system between Jupiter and Mars. It never goes around the sun. And so when it does come close, and there's all this debate in the literature, is it coming or are the Lagrange points coming? But if it's Nibiru that comes, this drastically makes them lose their gold shield, makes Earth have volcanoes, and the floating continents bump around, and there's great floods, and and there's huge solar flares. Forget about all the satellites we have. They're all going to burn out. Everything gets affected. The gravity of each planet affects, and star affects one another. But it's all getting more intense as
nemesis for reasons we don't know, beyond way beyond what we have information about, has moved in closer, and it's now, I think, 120 astronomical units from the Earth. It's getting closer, and all the planets are getting closer to the sun.
Okay, let me ask you this, Sasha. Where are you getting your information, especially regarding the planets and,
oh,
and
this,
so
this is this. Oh, oh, thank you. I can't highly recommend Dark Star. It goes through the scientific information and the counter information and the arguments about what would be causing the observed aberrations in the movement of satellites we send out and of planetary bodies, in the especially the areas of the Lagrange points, like where Seth is. And the most convincing argument, in my opinion, the one that accounts for data most economically, is that in Andy Lloyd's Dark Star. And you have to read it several times to understand the astronomy, but it accounts for the data most easily, in my opinion.
Okay, I agree with that. I think Andy Lloyd was right on. So I do want to say that for people listening, that we have an interview with Andy Lloyd. If you're not already aware of it, you can go to the videos on Project Camelot and also the videos on YouTube, the Project Camelot YouTube channel, and find our Andy Lloyd interview, which is highly recommended. Brilliant, wonderful guy. So at the moment, let me see what else we've got here. I was wondering if you want to address the monatomic gold side of gold from the planet, because you are addressing gold for the atmosphere. Some people believe, and I probably count myself as one of them, that a lot of what the Anunnaki are doing is using monatomic gold to basically grant themselves longevity.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Plus, there's a number of other things in the Gilgamesh epic that they allude to that prolong life, and they even allude to Zeasutra or Noah as being granted immortality, or the relative immortality, which might just be living millions of years that the Nibirans have. And all I can say is that I've heard the glimmerings, read things that this may be useful, but I do not know the chemistry of monatomic gold or how it prolongs life. Do you know that, Carrie? Could you give me some hints?
No, but I do know there is a man who I'm supposed to interview at some point who lives in Arizona. His name is David. I forget his last name at this moment, but he is deeply involved in creating monatomic gold, and he is one of the few people, he says, on the planet who has actually been able to do so. A company, believe it or not, a Japanese company, has stepped in and started to finance his work. He's more or less under the radar. He used to talk a long time ago on the UFO circuit, but he doesn't anymore. And so that we met him in South Africa, and I'm sorry that his last name is escaping me at this exact moment. But the other thing is really someone is saying in the chat, in terms of a question, that why don't they make their own gold? And I've heard that question in the past. I have my theory on that. What do you say to that, Sasha?
How much gold does it take? Must you invest in order to make gold? Be one question. The rumors that I've heard is that the science has moved to the place where that is what will happen, that we can in the future make gold. But one of the interesting things on Earth is that after the Great Deluge, these huge veins of gold became visible, really visible to their probe, even to the naked eye, all over the highlands of the Andes. And that's the major copper and gold mining stuff there, and that there's lots and lots of it. And also in the literature from ancient Sumer, it keeps indicating that gold, Earth is the planet that was full of gold, and that somehow there was a transit of Gaga, and that's Mercury, and that's Mercury did something to Earth that allowed Earth to have so much gold. And I don't know quite how that worked, because it's all stated in these anthropomorphic terms as though planets or consciousnesses that are running around doing this and that. But it sounds like Earth is where the gold is. And earlier probes, astronauts were killed trying to reach Earth and running into the asteroids. And it took Encke, who used the water cannon, to finally get through the asteroids. They knew the gold was here. He landed in the Persian Gulf. He started mining the gold in the Persian Gulf, and there wasn't very much. He followed the flex down, and that's what took him to South Africa, to Zimbabwe.
Okay, let's see. I'm not sure about this question. It's a little vague, but maybe I'll ask it anyway. What does all this do for us all, this info, as a planet of people still at the mercy of the cruel controllers?
Oh, thank you. That is the question. Thank you so much. What it does is it shows us the true history of humanity, that we are all in this boat together, that we have to stop killing each other. We have to band together and say we will not support the war machine. We will not be lied to anymore. We demand, we're adult people, we demand disclosure and a planetary-wide focus on survival and survival of our children. We've got to stop killing. We've got to develop a unitary. If people, if you get rid of the Illuminati at the top, people would rather do sports, share art, do business, and intermarry than kill each other. We've just got to stop this bullshit that was perpetrated on us by the Anunnaki and those they left in charge, and take charge by the basic sanction of nullity. We will not participate anymore in killing and war.
Yes, absolutely. And certainly no one would disagree with that. How we get there is it probably another matter, but definitely if I think we're on the way.
If our gold is still valuable to them, we will help them get the gold in exchange for what they can do for us. But we're not stupid slaves. We're intelligent creatures that can create consensus. Oh, if only that was true. But I hope we are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have no doubt that they're well aware of just how intelligent we are, or we have become over the ages as well, as our DNA has started to become more and more activated. Let me see.
I want to add one thing. This is really, really cool. In the museum in London, there is the last princess who is mostly Anunnaki. Her corpse is there, and if we get the DNA sample from her, we can find out what genes they have that have given them such longevity. It's right on the verge. Our science can get that information. They may already have gotten it, but the whole world needs to know this.
Yes, I would. Wasn't that what Zachariah Sitchin's last request was?
That's right. Her name is Princess Puabi, and she's from the Royal Cemetery where Gilgamesh and all his retainers were buried, and she is there. We can really learn what it is we need to do to live a long time and even to get taller.
Sorry about that. It is very fascinating. And I agree that there in theory should be ways to negotiate with some of these races, the Anunnaki being only one race really that's involved here in this planet and has been for quite some time in also influencing the so-called ruler class to act in certain ways. It's going to be an interesting dynamic as to how this whole thing plays out with the various races and the ones who have been trying to run things, who are going to have to start either stand down altogether, leave the planet altogether, or renegotiate their sort of deals with humanity as we sort of step up in these recent times.
Yes. Oh, I love what you're saying. You know, and just remember that, Gorbachev let
the Iron Curtain down without murdering every people. Jimmy Carter is now helping poor people build their houses.
Hi there. This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking to Sasha Lessen, who has been working with Sitchin years ago and carried forth a lot of those investigations. And I've got some more questions here in the chat, if that's okay with you, Sasha.
Sure.
Okay. One person wants to know, let me see if I can find this question. Kind of slipped out of hand here. Does the guest have a knowledge of aerosol spraying of Earth or other planets' atmospheres with heavy metals? If so, for what reason?
No, just other than just the buzz on the net that there are all kinds of particles that are getting used, seeded in the contrails, and it allows it makes some people sick, and it's bad news, and it's got something to do with what the secret admiralty military is doing, and the ordinary people are not being informed about what that is. But I think it's not very considerate of our lives.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting question, though, I think, on a scientific level, and whether or not these metals, because we do know that they're certainly seeding our skies with all kinds of things for various purposes, one of them being to create, from what I understand, a shield, even perhaps against the sunlight and the radiation from the sun during some of these times when we're going to be unprotected by the magnetosphere, I believe they call it. So there's a positive side to some of that. There's also a negative side, obviously, as they are poisoning people with all kinds of chemicals. And my understanding is they're also purposely weakening the immune system in preparation for the spread of certain viruses that they will then put unleash, which may be as early as this fall into the atmosphere.
There's a lot of history of you look at the plagues and you see drawings of the four horsemen with chemical tanks on their back spraying. One village will all die of the plague in Germany. The next one will be spared. This is population control. We're just like cattle to the people that control things. They would rather see lots of us die than lose their control. And there's those that are trying to save us.
Absolutely. So I wish there was a way, at this time, I just want to say, because I believe that there's a lot of truth to this notion that Marduk, the return of Marduk, is something that they've been waiting for, and that they have been preparing for it for quite some time, and what it may portend is the instigation of the New World Order. In other words, a lot of people know that they want to put into effect a New World Order. What they may not realize is that there's a ruler, so-called ruler, who they want to sort of put this in place for, and that could well be Marduk. And so, unfortunately, we don't have a whistleblower in this particular area other than, there's James Casbolt, who has talked about this to some degree in his writings. I don't know if you know about James Casbolt, but there are very few people out there that are even addressing this. Andy Lloyd, like I said, wrote it in fiction, but it would be very, very interesting to get more information about this.
Yeah, we need more information. What we need is open information, everything that all the intelligence services have. But, of course, that would mean them exposing that they set up 911 so that they could take away our civil liberties and make war on those who they wanted to, and most of all, seize the records, the true records in Iraq of humanity. And so there's great danger. We've really got to get the information to everybody. It belongs to everybody. We'll stop killing each other when we all know the truth.
Okay. So you worked alongside of Zachariah Sitchin for how long? How many years?
Oh, it's probably for about 12 years. Everything he
He did. I couldn't afford to go overseas, but I read everything and studied it, wrote about it. But it's not just he. There's a wonderful philosopher named Neil Freer who looks at things in its very, very broadest perspective and can actually see how Zachariah's information can free us from the matrix of want that keeps us running in place for our short lives and let us really develop the wonderful intelligence and compassion and passion of which we're capable.
Okay, you know, I do know Neil Freer. He's a wonderful man, and he has a website in that he talks about what he calls futons. He also, I believe he knew Timothy Leary and studied his work a great deal. And he is a scholar of Sitchin, I know, and has followed all of that. A very learned man. And he it's great to hear that you have also been in touch with him. I was just curious whether or not you got any, either from Neil Freer and or from Zachariah Sitchin, that you feel that they communicated anything sort of unique to you that you picked up on that hasn't been out in sort of the mainstream studies or the mainstream books that they wrote.
Definitely what I got was that one of the biggest problems of all humanity is how humanity has shut down the intelligence of women and the ability of women to seek cooperative solutions to things. Before Marduk took over, when the Anlalites accidentally radioactively killed everybody except Babylon, and Marduk took over, is he put a squash on the cooperation of both the Enkites and Anlalites, who had been sharing knowledge to their women wise figures, and made sure that every priestess had worked in one of Inanna's love temples was killed, and that knowledge was then hidden from humanity, and a bunch of lies about Marduk was propaganda was substituted in its stead, if Marduk kind of faction takes over, maybe the ones that are in charge now, there's some possibility that that's the case now, it's going to be a dismal day. What we need to do is restore feminine wisdom and honor it and find cooperative solutions to the problems of this planet and its people.
Okay, very well said. I wonder if you are aware of the idea that I read, which is that there in the group that was genetically engineered, there was one group of humanity that had in a certain sense, what I call the rebel gene removed. Yeah. And they were the ones who become, this is a depiction of the races as they are now, which is one group is more amenable to being ordered around. In other words, taking orders, sort of following orders, and has less of an inclination just on a natural level than another group. And I've always found that fascinating when I found out about it. In the work of Sitchin, because it correlates to what I've experienced in real life. I know I certainly come from the group that has the rebel gene, obviously, and many of the people I deal with probably do as well. But there's a large number of people out there who are, on a certain level genetically, actually had this bred out of them, the tendency to rebel and to think for themselves.
It makes a lot of sense. There was these two, the first creatures that were successful, the descendants of who was called Adamu, worked in the mines, but even they rebelled after a while. And the Anunnaki, Nergal and the Anunnaki that were in charge of them, just said, "Let them go." And they formed tribes, even though they hadn't had such a thing. And they were allowed to go out in the bush. It was easier to let them go, and so forth. And at one of his earlier books, Sitchin even said that this earlier group were the Homo Neanderthalensis, And then later on, when Enki started begatting with the prettiest girls, and then the kids of those, the prettiest girls that were born of them, and so forth, making improving, he said, the genetics of the group until he gets to these really bright people, the descendants of Adapa, and they're really super smart, and he rules through them. So there's always that these people were way more adaptive, but they, again, interbred with Homo neanderthalensis. And the story is that the Neanderthals now play for USC in Southern California.
I think that's a joke.
Great athletes among us are very often have a lot of those kind of genes too.
Okay, well, that may be. I do know that. I don't know. Are you familiar with Graham Hancock's work in regard to the Neanderthals?
It's not ringing any bells. Tell me what you are.
Well, Graham Hancock, sort of departed from his usual sort of exploration of ancient archaeology and all the years he spent doing that to write a fictional book called Entangled. And I interviewed him right around that time when he just completed his work on that book. And in the book, it's based on a fiction, but he says it's based on some information he was getting on a psychic level that ended up to be start to become manifest in the scientific community around the same time as a synchronicity. And that is that the Neanderthal race, which factors very much in his book, had red hair as in general, and that they tended to be a little more placid and less rebellious. In other words, what I was talking about, the less without the rebellion gene, they were quite intuitive, and they didn't communicated very telepathically. Mm-hmm. So there are traits that have been picked up and put into the human genome as it's gone forward in time.
Yes,
anyway, the races
too.
are quite a mixture of mm-hmm. things, and all of us are mixtures of all of this. So
yes.
There's not really any such thing as a pure strain.
In proximity, minimal effect.
I'm hearing some feedback.
Yeah, where is that all from?
Hello?
Hello, I'm here. Are you here, Carrie?
Okay, yeah, I was hearing some.
You have a caller at 6112.
Well, it's the producer that you have a caller.
I see. That's fine. Caller, go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was not connected yet, but I do have a question, though.
Sure.
If Jalila Star is correct that Nibiru is on the opposite side of the Earth, on the other side of the Sun,
yes.
Would that explain how Nibiru can be simultaneously be close and have minimal impact on Earth changes?
Not really, because what they're saying is that 180 degrees from Nibiru, as far as it possibly can get, is all this crap that always stays that far from Nibiru, and that's what's coming through now, and that Nibiru itself is way far away on its apogee, as far as it gets from Earth on the other side of Nemesis. So it just depends on what hypothesis you want to follow. But they now have probes. I read in the paper a few days ago where they're able to see what's dark, what can't be seen, and how much influence it has. And certainly if there's a huge body like the Sun in between Nibiru and Earth, that would affect things. But I just wonder if they wouldn't just multiply the effect by lining them up, like when all the harmonica virgins played together. It was a great concert.
Okay, caller, thank you for your question. I guess the caller's gone. So interesting. I think when you're saying Nibiru is its farthest point,
yes.
You are not talking about the brown dwarf, however.
No. The brown dwarf is where it has moved in closer.
Right. So
everything is closer and hotter.
Yeah. So I think people maybe get a little confused because some people don't realize that Nibiru is a planet in the system around a brown dwarf. And it's the brown dwarf that is moving into our system. Nibiru itself and the planets, how close they are is obviously not the same thing, although it kind of depends what their rotations are Exactly. In other words,
Lloyd says that Nibiru is the furthest out satellite of Nemesis, and then when it goes on its real far swing, it goes and hits where proto-Earth was, Tiamat, between Jupiter and Mars, and then goes back out. It goes all the way around by this, you can see it by Sagittarius, where Andy Lloyd says it is right now. But at the same time, all the crap that stays 180 degrees from it is coming through now as everything lines up in 2012.
Okay. I guess the question is, are there moons and other planets? And yes. Also, I was just talking to a whistleblower the other night who told me that there are a lot of planets in our solar system, not to mention our galaxy, but our solar system specifically, that we don't even know about.
Yes, yes. And they are the new infrared studies of the gravitational effects of dark matter that we can't see but still have gravitational effects is now being measured. And I know that our scientists can really tell stuff that's coming in, even if they're not disclosing that to us.
Fine. Sorry, I was just, hearing from Mike Harris, it appears uh-huh. that he was not able to come on the show. But that gave us more time, Sasha. Okay. That would have been a departure simply based on some recent information that was coming forward. Some people are, I think that someone is asking, is Nibiru coming close to the Earth on August 17th? And basically, this has been answered by our guest here. That questioner probably joined us a little later. He's basically, Sasha follows the more or less the Andy Lloyd interpretation of what's going on with the brown dwarf. And again, feels that although the brown dwarf is around the Oort cloud area, towards, you say, in the direction of Sagittarius at this time, that would put it quite a distance away from Earth. It is affecting our solar system, but it's not in our solar system, in the inner solar system yet. That's according to Andy Lloyd. It does contradict the information that Deagle and, John Moore are putting out there, but we again need more information. They are just not getting sufficient detail for us to be able to evaluate what their intelligence is, you know, sources are telling them. So, and there's also just a lot of disinfo right now and a lot of games being played.
This is the time for people with their telescopes who aren't connected with the government, who aren't afraid of just observing and sharing their observations, to start looking for what's coming down and let everybody know.
Okay. Someone is asking, Planet X mini solar system, as it approaches, could human DNA be manipulated from Nibiru's natural electric field?
Yes. I think it could be that could be an activating factor. That's certainly a hypothesis worth noticing.
Okay,
that there may be a timing to the development of some of our latent genes. If you just see what happens to children if they're not squashed, what happens to their consciousness? They know more and more and more and more. And it is just that they're standing on the shoulders of giants that we might like to think of as somehow these kids are smarter than we were. And it may be due to the maturing of our DNA that was a part of the legacy we got from the Anunnaki.
Okay, or what we actually came in even before that, at least according to the work of Ashiana Dean, there appears to be many, even before the Anunnaki ever arrived on Earth, there were what is called seedings of humanity, and various seedings came and went, and so that we are the result of multiple, again, genetic reengineering of the human genome. It's a very fascinating subject, one that we don't, of course, know enough about. Now, That's so right on,
Carrie. Cremo's work really indicates that rather than evolution from something from one unicelled organisms, that the humanoids that were running around at about the time of Homo erectus were devolved from earlier human settlement, and he's actually uncovered at very, very deep levels. It's, you know, as much as 60 million years and older, remains of large human beings that had pottery and all kinds of and baskets and stuff like that, so that there may have been several CDs. I think it's extremely likely.
Yes, thank you for that. I agree wholeheartedly, and I think it's something of a tragedy that that people who look into the history of humanity don't go back further. I also want to say, and I don't know how you feel about this, but my understanding, which is quite fascinating, from the Ashiana-Dean material, is that actually it was the visiting ET races who genetically engineered what we know of as apes and chimpanzees and monkeys from our DNA. In other words, it's the reverse we came to. The disinfo is that we came from them. Actually, we created them just as dogs and cats and all of various, you know, the creatures that inhabit the earth. Those beings are genetically engineered beings that are created when a race comes and takes over a planet and seeds it.
That makes so much sense. We know that the Anunnaki deliberately made sheep and cows and donkeys and various and lots of different kinds of grains and stuff like that. And plus, not to mention the centaurs and mermaids and all, they were playing with genetics, and so that it would be very easy. You could show mathematically that it's more likely that these were products of this tinkering, or whether they were indigenous products. And I think that the hypothesis for single-line evolution that's been carried with us from the 1800s is just so outmoded and does not efficiently account for the data.
Right, absolutely. Okay, let's see. Someone wants to know, what are your thoughts? And we are coming to the end of the 2 hours here, but what is the guest's thoughts on how the Anunnaki spread out over land? Was it just in the Middle East and South America?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I want to extend that because I've got this this individual, David Ritchie, who's gotten in touch with me regarding their influence, or what appears to be the influence, in Ireland, England, and Scotland.
Oh, definitely. And in 2024, when Marduk was coming up from Egypt and his son Nabu was coming down from Canaan, they were about to take the spaceport in Sinai from the Enlilites. Enlil, who had found out when he was exiled for raping his to-be-wife to Africa, Enki's pilot, Abgail, betrayed Enki and showed Enlil, Yahweh, where the nukes were hidden. So rather than lose the spaceport, Yahweh told his son Ninurta and Nergal, who was a traitor to the Enkiites, bomb Sodom and Gomorrah. They've gone over to Nabu and obliterate this spaceport. We still have our spaceport up by Nazca, and we'll just get off the planet. What happened, though, they didn't know about fallout, and Enki didn't even know they had nukes. They bombed the Dead Sea, Sodom and Gomorrah. They bombed the spaceport on Sinai, and the radioactive cloud blew over all Sumer, and everybody died. Even Baal, the Ninurta's wife, died. She tried to stay and help the humans. Enki protected his people that were in Masara, Eden, and got out of there with them, and the rest of the Anunnaki survived. But the wind spared Babylon. That's how come Marduk took over, and it became the age of the ram. He was now the big shot. He was Ra Amun, the Ra who had left Egypt, and he was Marduk, and he was the big shot. Well, the other Anunnaki spread. They went, Inanna's people had migrated as Aryans to the Indus Valley. Enki and Thoth went to England. They built all kinds of observatories, including Stonehenge, and had works that they did in Ireland. And then Thoth went on ahead and to Tenochtitlan and seeded the Mayan culture and joined his cousin Adad up in the Andes around Lake Titicaca and helped people get off the planet. But first he made all these beautiful, beautiful observatories so they could tell exactly when the transit of Venus was, when most of all, when Nibiru was going to return and give them a window of easy access and exit. It's about a
right, planet period. Earth. Okay, yeah, yes, that's a great summation, and done very quickly too. We only have like a minute left before the music comes up, I believe. So, do you want to say some parting words? I'm sorry that we're not going to get to all the questions in the chat. People have been becoming more and more fascinated as you go on.
We are choosers. We have a right to information. We have been granted protection by Enki and Nimma and Thoth. We need their help. We need to stop killing each other. We need to stop the space race. We need peace on Earth. We all humans are one. We've got to stop war.
Okay, thank you, Sasha Lesson. Very nice to talk to you, and I appreciate you coming on my show, and we'll do this again in the future, I hope. And take care.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
All right. Everyone have a great night and stay safe. Thank you.
Aloha.